Hi, everyone. I'm Scott Branley.
And I'm Alicia Coakley. Every member of the church has a story to share, one that can instill faith, invite growth, and inspire others.
On today's episode, we're going to hear how the unexpected death of a daughter helped one woman understand the Lord has been preparing her for both the blessings and the trials in her life. Welcome to Latter-day Lights. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Latter-day Lights. We're so glad you're here with us today, and we're really excited to introduce our guest, Marianne Gudak. Marianne, how are you doing today?
Doing good, thank you.
Well, thanks so much for reaching out to us and being willing to share your story. I know today's going to be a little more of a hard story to share. And I know that is definitely not easy, but I think it's super, super important, especially as members of the church, to know how to navigate grief and the gospel. And so I really appreciate you coming on here and being so open and just sharing what you've learned through this whole experience. But before we get to all of that heavy stuff and beautiful blessings and all of the things that you're going to share today, we would love to know a little bit more about you and your family and what you do and where you come from and all the good things.
Well, I guess I should start at the beginning. I was born in 1961. I live in Vernal, Utah. I have two amazing kids and a really great husband. I have three grandbabies. I'm an artist. I love to paint and draw. And this community that I live in is a beautiful community. I was just talking about this balloon festival that we had this weekend, a hot air balloon festival. And I think all of Vernal was on Main Street, and it was just really great. So
that
anyway,
is so cool.
I live in a beautiful place.
That's awesome.
We're close to Flaming Gorge Reservoir. We're about 30 miles from Colorado and about 45 minutes from Wyoming. So it's a great place. Yeah.
We're going to have to visit for sure.
Yes. Yes. Dinosaur land is what they call it because we have dinosaur fossils here.
Oh, okay. Is that where, do you guys have like the petroglyphs and stuff too?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Okay. I might have actually been through there before, and we might have stopped if it's the same place. But I mean, I guess that's over in all, like not all parts of Utah, but more southern Utah, right? Anyway, there's like central and southern Utah. There's like a lot of dinosaur fossils and petroglyphs and stuff. Yeah, that's cool.
And I guess they're finding them down in Moab and St. George. They're finding them all over. So
that is so cool.
Anyway,
I love it.
So I grew up in the 60s and the 70s. I feel like it was probably the greatest era in all of history. the best music.
I concur. You know,
the Brady Bunch, you know, the groovy peace, love, and rock and roll and all that stuff. It was really a great time. You know, we rode our bicycles all over the place and never worried about anything. And so my childhood was, I would say, when I hear a lot of people talk about their childhoods, I feel very, very blessed that my childhood was pretty amazing. And I think it really helped to give me the foundation that I was going to need as I got older.
Wow.
Amazing parents, raised in a very active LDS church setting, grandparents close by, cousins, magical Christmases, all the, you know, Norman Rockwell type of stuff. Feel like just very, very blessed.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds wonderful. I love that. Very cool.
I wrote a couple of notes down and so that I can just kind of, look at him. But my dad served in World War II. He served in the Navy on the Bella Gulf. He never really talked too much about his military experience. My dad was extremely, he was a very humble man. Mm-hmm. But he did talk about, that after they bombed Hiroshima, they went onto the island, and he said how sad it was because the island had been completely obliterated. I mean, it was mm-hmm. just devastation. And they wanted the servicemen to go onto the island and, I guess just check things out. And I remember my dad saying, you know, they had kind of been brainwashed to hate the enemy. And when they went onto the island, it was mainly just women and children because most of the men had been killed and their homes had been destroyed and burned, their fields and their food, and they were hungry. And he just said how extremely sad it was, and that the commander of the ship told all the servicemen to go back onto the ship and to gather all the supplies that they weren't going to need to get back to the United States and take it onto the island and share with the people that were there.
Wow.
I have a lot of, I have brothers that served in the military, and anyway, so I feel, you know, feel very blessed, you know, for the family that I'm in.
That's a cool story.
Going to say, we're probably going to have you on for a lot more stories. Cause like, I'm like wanting to hear more about this and that.
Well, I'll just tell you something really interesting about that I wasn't going to say, but, when my mom passed in 2000, she passed away very suddenly, very quickly. It was from a blood clot and it went into mm-hmm. her heart and lungs. And like, literally, it was like she got to the hospital. I got a phone call to get down there and she passed. There's kind of a story with that too, but I won't go into that. But my dad, we had about a week with my dad before he passed, and it was one of the most beautiful experiences I've ever had. He literally was being taught the whole entire week. Like he was in and out of consciousness, but he was being taught, and he would actually like put his hands up to the ceiling, and he would say to whoever he was talking to, teach me more. I want to know more. Teach me more. And so, but one of the experiences, while I was sitting there with him, is that he started talking to some men, and he was kind of looking up at the ceiling. And I said to him, "Who are you talking to, Dad?" And he said, "Well, those are my military buddies. I haven't seen them since I was in the military." And he was just carrying on a conversation with them.
Wow.
It was such an amazing experience. And another thing I want to say about that is he heard nonstop music. Like, he would just talk about like hearing the angels sing and hearing like, at one time he said to me, "Marianne, do you hear that man singing?" And I said, "I don't, Dad." And he said, "Oh, his voice is so beautiful and it's so clear." And I said, "What's he singing, Dad?" And he said, "Onward, Christian soldiers." And he just started singing with him. So it's very real, and it's just so close.
So Marianne, I've never started crying before the story even started.
I wasn't even going to talk about that. I'm sorry.
I'm so glad you did. It's so beautiful. Oh, man. Okay.
My life is extremely blessed.
Wow.
Yeah, what a cool experience.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. Wow.
So I was raised on a small farm, raised to love animals and love everything, love trees and everything. Probably the first experience that I ever remember dealing with tragedy. My oldest brother, Doug, was serving in the Army, and this was at the time of Vietnam. And he was stationed in Germany. I remember my mom and dad being very grateful that he wasn't actually in you know, Vietnam. Mm-hmm. But his wife gave birth to a beautiful baby girl named Michelle, and they lived in Logan, Utah. And so when Michelle was about 3 months old, Doug had never seen Michelle, and called Margaret and said that the military had said that he could actually have Margaret and the baby come over to Germany and live on the base with him. And so at that time, she had to go into Salt Lake to get a military passport. So she loaded up the baby and her sister. They had this little car. And at that time, car seats weren't real prevalent. And so they put her in a bassinet in the back seat. And on the way home, coming home from Salt Lake, it had been raining. And what is that canyon? Is that Sardine, Scott, that goes from Logan to Salt Lake? Anyway, it's
I think so.
It can be kind of treacherous. Mm-hmm. And anyway, it like I said, it had been raining, and a car that was going too fast came around a corner and spun out and slammed into Margaret's car. And the baby Michelle was thrown, and she was killed. And that was the first time that, like I said, that I remember just experience real tragedy. But here's where I want to go with that story. So like I said, I was like 10 years old and I was playing with my dolls in the living room. My mom was a really hard worker and she hardly ever took a nap, but she came in that morning and she said, I don't know why I'm so sleepy, but I think I'm just going to try to lay down and take a 10 minute nap. And so she did. And I was just playing quietly there. And all of a sudden, she just sat straight up and she just took this big breath, like she was just startled. And it scared me. And I remember, you know, saying, "Are you okay, Mom?" And she's like, I don't know. I don't know. So she got up, and at that time, we didn't have cell phones. We just had landlines. And she went in and she tried to call Margaret and she didn't answer. And so she waited a little while, tried again, and no answer. So a couple of hours later, the phone rings and Mom answers it, and it's Margaret. And she told my mom about the accident and that Michelle had been killed. Oh, man. Well, my mom, of course, just fell apart. But what had happened is when my mom took this nap, she had a dream that Margaret was running towards her, and she had a yellow blouse on and a blue skirt, and she was holding Michelle in her arms. And as she was running towards her, she tripped and fell, or was falling, and she like threw the baby out to my mom, and she said to my mom, "Catch her, Mom." And that's when my mom sat up and was so startled. So the interesting thing we found out after that is Margaret was wearing that blue skirt and yellow blouse when this accident happened.
Wow.
And, you know, being like 10 years old, I mean, I didn't really understand any of that. You know, I didn't really understand like the Lord's hand in preparing my mom. And as I kind of go on with my stories, I'll kind of give you my thoughts.
Okay. Well, why don't we officially put you in the hot seat?
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh no. So I went through junior high and high school and had, you know, great experiences. In 1978, I met this really cute little Catholic boy. And in 1979, I married him. And we're still married, and and he's a good partner. Like, we do really well together. But soon after we were married, I found out I was pregnant, and 6 months later, I went into premature labor and gave birth to a little boy, but he didn't live. And so then we decided we would wait a little bit, and then I tried getting pregnant, and I couldn't get pregnant. And so there was about 5 years there that we just kept trying and nothing was happening. So I started like fertility treatments. Well, I had this really great doctor. His name was Dr. Evans. And during this time, he kind of kept suggesting, have you ever thought about adoption? And we were young and we just felt like we hadn't really explored all the avenues. And so, you know, we just kept saying, well, no, we're just not quite there yet. Well, at one point during this time, he said, you know, I served on a mission with a companion. His name is Dr. Later. And he also became a gynecologist, and he is a doctor in Salt Lake. And he said, next time you're in Salt Lake, why don't you just stop by and chat with him? And I thought, okay, well, that's odd, but okay. And so the next time we were in Salt Lake, we stopped at this hospital and asked if we could meet with this doctor. And so we went into this room and he asked what we were there for, and we told him. And he said, you know, he said, I don't really deal with a lot of adoptions. He said, I help lots of babies come into the world, but I don't really deal with adoptions. And so that was kind of that, like there wasn't anything to it. And I remember leaving there and just thinking, well, that was kind of odd. Like, you know, I don't know what that was all about.
Right.
So then we go a few more years and, we start really getting into like the infertility stuff, and I get pregnant, and I carry this baby about 4 months, and I again go into premature labor, and I give birth to a little boy and lost him.
Oh my gosh.
So after they found out I had a medical problem. And they call it a bicornia uterus or a rabbit ear's uterus. And it's where you have a partition in the wall of your uterus. And so it's hard to carry a baby full term. So they did surgery, and I waited about a year and I got pregnant. And, at about 7 months, I started to hemorrhage. And there was a doctor here in Vernal, and he was able to do a cerclage where they tie the cervix shut. But when he did that, he didn't put me on antibiotics, and I ended up getting staph infection. And the staph got into the bag of water with the baby. And so I went into labor, and they lifelighted me to Provo, and they took him cesarean, and he lived for 23 hours. And so I have three little boys waiting in heaven. But I was so devastated after losing that baby. And I just remember saying to my mom, you know, there's nothing good that can happen from this. And I remember my mom saying, you know, hon, there's always a silver lining. And I just remember thinking, like, what? Like, How can there be a silver lining, you know, to this? But anyway, let me see where I'm at here. So we decided that we're going to try to adopt. So being two different religions, at that time, it was really difficult to adopt. We went to LDS services and we couldn't go through them because you both had to hold a temple recommend. We couldn't go through Catholic services because you both had to be Catholic. So then we started kind of looking at, you know, like social services, that kind of stuff. And actually had a woman from social services that came into our home to do a home study and told us that no one would ever want to give us a baby.
Really?
Because, yeah, we'd been married
two religions.
Yeah, because we'd been married 9 years at that point. And she just said, she turned around and she said to us, I strongly suggest that one of you change your religion, because no one will ever want to give you a baby being two different religions.
And this was what, the late 80s then, around this time, early 90s?
It would have been late 80s. No. Yeah, late 80s. And so, it was
baffling to me. Like,
it was devastating. Wow. I think that was probably the lowest point that I had ever been in my life. And mm-hmm. you know, till that point. So anyway, we found a place in Salt Lake that, it was called Children's Service Society, and we put our papers in with them, and they told us, well, you're looking at maybe 2-3 years if you get one, because all, you know, so many people are wanting to adopt. And so it was feeling pretty hopeless at that point. And then about 2 months later, we get a phone call from this doctor later, who, like, we hadn't talked to for years, right? I had lost two babies, you know, since we had mm-hmm. talked to him. And he said, I don't know why I was thinking about you, but I just wondered, have you ever been able to get a baby? And I said, no. In fact, I've lost two babies since. And he said, you know, I have a friend who has a friend that's an attorney, and I just feel like you need to get a hold of him. An attorney that does adoptions. Sorry. I just think you need to get a hold of him. And so, I thought, well, it's not going to hurt. So I called him, and he said, you know, send me your papers. I've got file cabinets full of, people that want babies. I'm losing my train of thought here. Okay. They, just send me your file. So we did. We sent the file to him, and just thought, well, we'll be really lucky here if we ever hear from him.
Right.
About 3 months later, we get a call, and he said, I had a young gal that came in. The birth father doesn't want anything to do with this. She went through our file cabinet, and she picked you and your husband out to be the parents of her baby.
Wow.
And it just went so smoothly. Like, the whole adoption process just, it couldn't have gone any smoother. And I was scared out of my mind. Like, I just thought, this is never going to happen. She's mm-hmm. going to change her mind at the last minute, and I'm going to mm-hmm. lose another baby. But anyway, it just went perfectly. Where I kind of wanted to go with that story is that I was probably in like junior high when Dr. Evans was serving his mission with Dr. Later. Mm-hmm. And it took all that coming together in order for this path to take place. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, for them to serve on their mission together, for them to take the career paths that they did, you know, mm-hmm. for them to both be involved in my life, and then for this adoption to take place.
Right.
Well, and for them to both be inspired to do what they did.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. 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 Just, and there's where I'm talking, you know, there's the preparation of the Lord, right? Mm-hmm. That he's preparing. He's constantly preparing. Like, he's in our lives every minute of our lives. We just don't see it. And he's right. just preparing the way. So anyway, we adopt this beautiful little baby girl. She had like rosebud lips, and she just was perfect. I remember after we got her, laying her on a blanket on the floor of our living room and just staring at her. But I always had this feeling of that I wasn't going to have her forever. And I would just sit there and sob and sob. And I remember kind of just like chalking it up, thinking that, well, it's just because I've lost babies, and I was scared I was going to lose her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so as time goes on, you know, that feeling kind of goes away. I mean, I think it's looking back, I think it was always kind of there. And I think that's one of the reasons that I was so involved in her life and was so close to her. But anyway, so I just enjoyed her. And, 2 years later, I was able to, I was down for 7 months flat, but I was able to give birth to our son, to Jeremy. Yeah. Awesome. And, yeah, so now I've got my two kids. I've got Whitney and I have Jeremy, and, okay. Life is good and we're raising kids and enjoying them. Well, when Whitney was about 14 years old, Mike had always taken the kids out on the back roads and had them drive, because he always said, I'm not going to put my kids behind the wheel of a death trap and not have them know how to drive at 16. And so, so my husband and Jeremy were out at the motocross track here. My son did motocross, and Whitney and I were in the backyard. We were doing some yard work, and, we got done and I said to Whitney, let's go in, let's pop some popcorn and let's go in and watch a movie. And she said, okay. And so, I said, well, I'm going to pull our pickup into the garage. And she said, I want to do it, Mom. Let me do it. And so it's a big, you know, a big pickup. And so as she starts to get into the truck, she said, Mom, will you guide me in? Because she had a hard time kind of knowing like when to stop. And I said, sure. And I started to get in front of the truck, and I had this voice that actually stopped me. And it said, don't get in front of the truck. And so I stopped, and I hesitated, and I stopped, and I just kind of thought about it for a second. And I thought, well, Mike does this all the time. He guides them in all the time. So I start to get in front of the truck. And again, this voice said to me, don't get in front of the truck. Mm. And I stopped, and I said to Whitney, make sure you hit the brake and not the gas when I put my hand up, because if you hit the gas, you'll crush me. So I get in front of the truck and I'm guiding her in, and I put my hand up for her to stop. And I think by me saying that to her, I think it probably confused her, and she hit the gas and it pinned me up against the wall. So the truck is spinning, and, and she goes into shock. So the truck is pushing up against me. Mm-hmm. And, the blessing out of all that is there were wooden cabinets behind me, and, it was the bumper of the truck that actually was like against my femurs, and the cabinet behind me gave in. And so it just broke my femurs, both femurs, just a clean break. When she finally could kind of like, you know, come out of shock a little bit. Yeah. She put it in reverse and she backed up, and I didn't know that my femurs had been broken. I mean, all I knew is this immense pain. And, so I just went down on the floor because there was nothing to hold me up.
Right.
But I remember that my biggest concern was her. Like, I was so afraid for her and what she was witnessing. And so she was hysterical and was, you know, crying. And I just said to her, babe, go in and get a blanket, cover me up, and call 911. And so she did. And, anyway, they lifelighted me out to, University of Utah. They took my knees apart. They shoved two titanium rods up my femurs, put my knees back together, and sent me home. So, it was probably maybe a couple weeks after that, my knees started to stiffen up. Because they want you to, they've got you on this machine and they're trying to get the, you know, that mobility, that bend mm-hmm. back into your knees, and they just stiffened up. So my husband called the surgeon up to the university and he said, well, I think what's happened is she's just built up all this scar tissue. So mm-hmm. bring her out and I'll manipulate them and break all that apart. So I had a history of blood clots. And so when they did the surgery to put the rods in, they put me on blood thinners. So when he manipulated my knees, he didn't take into account that I was on blood thinners. So he was extremely pleased with what he'd done. He told Mike, he said, boy, I cranked those and I heard them pop and crackle and I got it, you know, got those to a 180 and sent us home. And as we're coming into Vernal, my knees are like this and they're full of blood and just horrendous pain. And so, Mike drives immediately to the emergency room here in Vernal. We have this amazing emergency room physician named Dr. Nielsen. And he said, she's bleeding out because she's on blood thinners. And, you know, he didn't take into account that I was on these blood thinners. And he said, so we'll need to give her some synthetic vitamin K, which will thicken up her blood, and then he'll start drawing the blood out. So they put an IV in, they start putting the vitamin K in, he gets the syringe, he's starting to draw the blood out, and I start to shake violently, and I can't breathe, and I can feel that I'm leaving. And to describe what it's like was I felt like I was sinking down into the bed, and the bed was kind of coming up around me. And as I was sinking lower, all of a sudden I was up above, and I was up like on the ceiling looking down. Mm-hmm. And I could see everything that was going on. You know, I could see me laying there. But I could see the nurses and the doctors, and they were frantic. But the thing I remember the most is I could feel them. Like I could feel their worry. I could feel, them, they're being, you know, frantic. I could feel Dr. Nielsen, thinking about what he needed to do, what was next, you know, what he was telling them. But the thing I remember the most is I could feel my husband, and I could feel how afraid he was. And, so I remember Dr. Nielsen saying, get out the paddles. And then after I felt Mike's fear, I just remember feeling like I need to go back. And then I guess I went back. I don't know how else to explain it. They didn't have to use the paddles because, he had put something into the IV to reverse the vitamin K. Anyway, what I found out later was that I had, a 1 in a billion allergic reaction to the synthetic vitamin K.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. So anyway, so that was kind of my experience with that. But after that, it was a long rehabilitation. But Whitney never left my side. We just got extremely close after that and just stayed very, very close. So then the kids went to high school. They Like I said, Jeremy was a motocross rider, and so we were always going on the weekends watching him race. Whitney was a cheerleader in high school, and so we were always at the games watching her. There was always kids at our house. We just enjoyed them, just fully enjoyed her children. After Whitney graduated, she went up to Utah State University up in Logan, and she got her diploma to be an elementary ed school teacher. And she met a young man while she was there, and they got married. And so, you know, life is going on. Mm-hmm. And so during Whitney's marriage, things started to go south, and they started having a really rough time. But towards about the sixth year that they were married, she got pregnant, and she had this beautiful little girl and named her Renner Marie. And Renner comes from a motocross rider that she really liked when she was a little girl. His name was Ronnie Renner, and he did these amazing whips on motorcycles. And so she said, "Mom, if I ever have a little girl, I'm going to name her Renner." And so that's where her name comes from. So anyway, she has this little girl, and the marriage just isn't working. It wasn't working for either one of them. And so at about six, when Renner was about 6 months old, Whitney moved home with us. And it was hard. You know, it was a blessing having her here with us and having the baby here with us. We enjoyed that, but it was hard watching her try to navigate going through this divorce and the custody of Renner, and I know it was hard on the other side too, for the other family. And so I don't want this to sound one-sided at all. I know that it was difficult on both sides. But so Renner was born in January, and the next, so she had her first year birthday, and then the next August, things were getting pretty nasty. And I was at work, and she called me, and so there had been a couple of custody exchanges, and she called me at work, and she said, "Mom, I had a really horrible dream." And I said, "Well, what happened?" And she said, I had this really horrific dream that Renner and I were in a really violent car accident." And when she told me about it, it physically hurt. Like it felt like somebody had punched me in the chest. And I said, "You know what, babe?" I said, "There's just been a lot of trauma that's gone on. You're just hurt. You know, it's nothing. Just try not to dwell on it. And, you know, just say your prayers and everything will be okay." And this kid, honestly, she could sleep through a freight train, and she never remembered her dreams. So it was really odd that she would, you know, have this dream and remember it. So 2 days later, again, I'm at work, and she calls me, and she said, "Mom, I just had the same dream." And she said, "It actually sat me up in bed." And she said, "It was so violent and so horrific." And I just said to her, "Babe, you know, this is just stress. You know, try not to worry about it. It's, you know, we just need to pray and everything will be okay." So she was supposed to, in October, on October 15th, her and her husband were going to meet for the final custody hearing and divorce. Well, after the second dream, she was really upset for a little while. And then she just started to receive like this amazing peace. Just, it was almost like she was just, I don't even know how to explain it. Like she was just peaceful. Mm-hmm. And she started telling everyone that if she could hold on till October, that she would be okay. And, you know, she would tell us and she would tell family members and even people like she would, we'd be at the grocery store and she'd be talking to somebody and she would just say to them, you know what? If I can hold on to October, I'm going to be okay. And, you know, I would even have people say to me, what does she mean? Like, what is she talking about? Hold on till October. And I was like, I don't know. Maybe because the divorce will be final and they can, you know, both kind of, you know, go their own ways and navigate life a little better. But she was peaceful. Like she was totally okay with it. So the week before the 15th, that Wednesday, we drove to Heber, which is, 2.5 hours out of Vernal. So her husband would have come Logan. And so that was about the halfway point. And they had picked up Brenner and had her for a few days. And then we were supposed to pick her up on Sunday, which was the 11th of October. So we met in Heber. And at that time of the year, you know, it gets dark really fast. And, we were traveling back from Heber and it was a black night. It wasn't stormy. It was really clear, but it was just one of those nights where it didn't feel like there was a moon or stars out. It just felt, you know, very, very black. Mm-hmm. And we were coming into, they call it Fort Mighton. There's Fort Mighton and then there's Roosevelt and then there's Vernal. So we're about 45 minutes out of Vernal. We're coming into Fort Mighton and there was an SUV in front of us. And all of a sudden the SUV hits his brakes and he slams into a black cow that was in the middle of the road. Mm-hmm. And we swerved around the SUV, we swerved around the cow and all of us, my husband was driving, I was in the passenger seat and Whitney and Renner were in the back seat. And we both all said, we need to stop and see if anybody's hurt. So Mike pulls in front of the SUV and he's got the tail lights. He has the car kind of parked out so that he can turn on the emergency flashers so that if anybody's coming, they can see that there's an accident and to slow down. So I start to get out of the car and as I'm getting out, this voice said to me, don't get out of the car. And I kind of hesitate. And then once again, I hear, don't get out of the car. So I shut my door and I didn't realize that Whitney had gotten out of the car. So Mike is just getting out of the car and he turns around and he sees Whitney standing in front of the SUV with the man that was driving the SUV and his name is Cody Marks. And Cody's kind of slumped over in front of the SUV and she's got her hand on his shoulder. And just then we hear this really horrific noise and there was a distracted driver that was going way too fast, was on his cell phone. He's in a pickup and he's pulling an enclosed trailer with a race car inside of it. And he doesn't slow down. And the cow that was dead in the road, he hits the cow and he swerves over and hits the back of the SUV, which slams into Cody and Whitney. And it threw Cody right by my passenger door and killed him on impact. And it threw Whitney about 50 feet out into the field. And like I said, it was a pitch dark night. And so Mike goes running out into the field and he's screaming at this man to help him find our daughter. The man gets out of his truck on his cell phone and he's talking about his race car that it's possibly wrecked in the trailer. And he's just walking around. He's just talking on his cell phone. Gosh. He doesn't help Mike. He actually walked towards the car. He looked down at Cody's body and he just walked off. He didn't check him.
Oh my gosh.
Nothing. So interesting thing is before we left to go to Heber, as we're getting into the car, Mike just happened to look over on the counter in the garage and he has this headlamp that he wears on his head that, you know, when he's outside doing projects, mm-hmm. and he just happened to grab that. And there was also a blanket there. So he grabbed the headlamp and the blanket and he threw them into the trunk. Mm-hmm. So as he's out in the field, he can't find Whitney. So something says to him, get the light. So he runs back to the car and he opens the trunk and he gets the light and he runs back into the field. So during this time, I'm hysterical and I'm, you know, I don't know what's going on. Like it all happened so fast mm-hmm. that I'm not sure what's going on. And I'm sure I think I probably went into some kind of shock and Mike, you know, had yelled at me to call 911 and I was trying to get my, you know, my phone open, trying to put the code in, you know, and finally got 911. I'm talking to the operator and I'm screaming, you know, at Mike to find Whitney. And, you know, it's just one of those nightmare scenes, you know, that you mm-hmm. see in the movies that you just don't think can possibly happen. And I'm talking to the 911 operator and she's asking us where we're at. You know, I'm trying to explain to her. And so anyway, this car pulls up and it's where Fort Mighton is, it's on, the Ute Indian Reservation. And so two, Native Americans get out of this car and they walk up to the car. And I was so grateful. The one man puts his head in the car and he just kind of takes my arm and he said, just hold on to me and don't look out at the car. And the other man walked over to the trunk and found the blanket and he got the blanket and brought it over and he covered Cody's body. And, so Mike's out in the field and by this time the highway patrolmen are coming. So I'm able to get off of 911 and I called Jeremy, my son, and so they jump in their truck and his little wife, Maddie, was 7 months pregnant and they're driving, you know, to the accident. And Mike finds Whitney's arm and she had been thrown so hard that she was literally completely pushed underneath the dirt. So he pulls her out from underneath the dirt and she's got a faint heartbeat. And so by this time, here's the highway patrol. Here comes the ambulance. My son gets there just as the ambulance does. They load Whitney up into the ambulance and Renner is in her car seat. And this whole entire time is not making a peep, nothing. And one of, a woman had stopped. She actually got Renner out of her car seat and had put Renner on my lap. And I know that either the Savior was with her or her mom was with her. Because this baby girl didn't make a peep. the whole entire time. So we go to the emergency room in Roosevelt, and this is at the time COVID is rampant. Mm. And so they're not very kind at the hospital. You know, they've had enough, you know, but they won't let us back to where she's at. And you know, I keep telling them, you know, I need to get back there with my baby. And finally he said, the nurse comes up and he said, we've called Life Flight, but I don't think she's going to make it. So you can come back. So we went back, and she had coded twice in the ambulance, and she was coding again. And I remember the doctors on top of her pumping her chest, and I was just screaming at them to not let my baby die, and just begging the Lord to please not take her. And I was begging someone to give her a priest blessing. And one of the EMTs had some oil in his pocket. And so he and one of the doctors started to give her a priesthood blessing. And they called it. She died. It's just hard to even explain. What it's like. And I think that thing that one of the things that's so hard is that you feel so alone. And I just remember asking God, like, where are you? But I look back at it now, and there's so many blessings that happened during that time. We had this window that just opened, like right at that time. They weren't doing funerals before that, and mm-hmm. we were able to do a funeral. And there were over 500 people at her funeral. And right after that, things closed up again. It was a miracle, really. Things like that, the whole community just pulled together. I mean, even on the windy side, sign downtown, they put on the sign, our love and prayers are with the Gudak family. Just people are amazing. They really are amazing. We live in such a beautiful world. You know, there's so much going on around us that is not good, but there's so much around us that is good. And we need to recognize the good and the good in people. And they want to help you, you know, they want to be there for you. It was tough after that. Grief is vicious. But the interesting thing is I pulled closer to my Heavenly Father. I just couldn't get enough. I grabbed every spiritual book I could find. I I grabbed the scriptures. I read through the New Testament. I prayed like I have never prayed before. I needed him. And looking back at it now, I know he was there every minute. Even those times I didn't feel it, I know he was there. I don't know how I would have got through this without him, and how I still need him.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting how we look back and we don't necessarily see him in the moment, but we look back and we see him all throughout.
All throughout. He never left me.
Yeah.
That happened in October. The next July, Mike and I had to go to Salt Lake, and we always have to pass the accident site, and it's tough, you know, right through there. Mm-hmm. And we went through it, and this is just out of the blue. Mike said to me, "Have you ever considered being a life coach?" And I said, "No, not really." And he said, "You know, Marianne," he said, "I think it would be really good for you. And I think you'd be really good for other people." And so after he said that, I just thought a lot about it. And I thought, you know, this doesn't sound that strange at all. Mm-hmm. When we got back home, I looked into a school, and I dove in, and about 3 months later, got my certification to be a wholeness and wellness life coach, with the emphasis in grief and trauma. And I would say that with my Savior has literally like saved me. It has given me a chance and an outlet to describe grief, and for people to have an understanding that everyone is different and every relationship is different. Mm-hmm. And we all grieve differently, and it's all so individual, and it's okay. And it's okay to take as long as you need, as long as you don't let yourself end up in that deep, dark pit that you can't climb out of, because that's where Satan dwells. And that's right. Where he likes to get his claws in. And that's when, you know, we just need to call upon the Lord to pull us out, you know, give us some light, give us something to hang on to. One of the things also is that I learned to forgive. And that has been probably the hardest of all the commandments. But it is the only thing that can release you from being the victim.
Yeah.
When you hold on to that, it's so heavy. And it just keeps you from being able to be the person that the Lord knows you can be. And so to be able mm-hmm. to forgive and have an understanding that these people that were involved in the accident, they don't owe me anything. Mm. Neither the farmer hasn't apologized, the distracted driver hasn't apologized, and that's okay. They don't need to. It's on them. It's their thing. It's their life. My life is my life, and I need to do what's best for me. And that releases me from being the victim in all this. And the other thing is that when we all have this understanding that in every circumstance in our life, we all hold a responsibility. And even though the responsibility was the negligent farmer and the distracted driver, it was our responsibility too, because we were the ones that actually made the decision to stop and help this man. And that was our responsibility in the accident. And I wouldn't change that for anything, because that's what we do. We stop and help people that are in need. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think with all of that, and where I want to kind of go back with the Lord preparing us, I remember having this talk with my sister-in-law, and I said to her, I don't understand why the Lord gave Whitney those dreams. And she said to me, you know, Marianne, I think he wants you to understand that he knows everything. He knows beginning to end. Mm-hmm. And he wants you to know that he is aware and that he is there, and he is there with you. I kind of forgot this part. Let me back up, because this is really, really important. After the day after Whitney, was killed, I was laying there on her bed in the bedroom and was a mess. And, I just had this voice that said to me, you need to read the last text that Whitney sent you. And so I got my cell phone out and I pulled her up and I read this text. And this is what her text said to me. And again, this morning when I was praying, I keep thinking of a car crash and I don't know why. And I think he is watching out for me. I just have to keep having faith in him.
Wow.
Oh.
Gosh.
Oh.
So that's my story.
Oh my goodness.
The last thing she's texted you is she's going to have faith in God.
Yes. And we have that on her headstone.
Wow.
Oh. That's incredible.
I apologize. I am a huge mess. And normally I am like a big talker, but your whole story is, it's so tragic and it's so beautiful. Like, there's so much beauty in it and so much love in it. And I know, you know, when we talked before we got on the show here, you mentioned that things aren't perfect the way that, you know, that you were hoping, you know, in regards to just family relationships and things like that. There's still tough things. It's not like everything is easier now and everyone's drama has been solved and whatever else. Like, there's still a lot of things. And I think that sometimes that's the hardest part of grief, is what's compounded because of it.
Right.
It's not just losing someone. It's losing everything that you thought was going to be a part of your life because they were there.
Yeah.
You know, and then having to navigate, like you were mentioning, like everybody else's decisions. And I just thought that was so profound that you recognized that you're only responsible for you.
Yeah.
You know, you're only responsible for what it is that you can take responsibility for them, and you don't have to go putting the blame on anybody else that was involved in the accident. You don't have to put the blame on anybody who doesn't grieve the same way that you do. You know, I'm sure that there's a lot of very complicated grief in a situation like this. And I just think, I think your husband was very inspired.
Yeah.
For you to become a life coach, because I honestly believe that one of the best things that we can do, and one of the most responsible things that we can do in this life when we are given challenges and trials and tragedies, is to use those to help other people. I am such a hardcore believer in that. I don't think that Heavenly Father will allow us to go through anything that isn't supposed to be used for not only building the kingdom, but also for building the individuals within the kingdom. And I love that you did something with that, you know, that you decided to not just stay in that dark place.
Right.
Where you had every right. Everybody could have totally justified you just being angry, especially because of you, your other losses that you had with your children and the things that you guys had gone through with that. But what an example of Christ-like love and diligence on your part to be here sharing your story and to take your story and to reach out to try to help others. I just, my whole heart is so full right now. I can't stop crying. I'm going to need to have Scott take over the rest of this, in this episode.
Oh, well, it's just beautiful. I was thinking along those lines, you know, that's so funny. We were on the same thought process. I was thinking that is such an interesting inspiration that your husband had to have you be a life coach just because of all the experiences you've had. You have a unique gift that you can mm-hmm. give others through your life experience so that they can have peace. And that's a gift that I know you don't necessarily want to think that it's a gift from your daughter, but in a way, you know, you going through this and getting peace at the end is giving you the ability to give that peace to others when they have tragedy mm-hmm. in their life.
Right. And my daughter was such a giver. Like, she was the kind of person that, well, when she was a cheerleader, they used to call her Mother Whitney because she was the one that carried the duffel bag that was full of bobby pins and safety pins and you know, all those things that everybody else would forget. And, you know, she just, like, the stories that came after, I knew what kind of person she was. I knew how incredible she was, but the stories that I would hear from people that I didn't even know of, things that she would do for other people, just, mm-hmm. you know, just was like a mountain, you know, of goodness. She was just such a special light and still is. She's, you know, she's still my light. I feel her and I know she's prodding me on, you know, mm-hmm. she's saying, go, Mom. She's got her pom poms out. And, I organized a, seminar last June and, had three other people that I asked to speak with me. And we actually filled the room to capacity. It was 120 people and, did this seminar, and it was pretty amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
I have to ask, after Whitney passed, did you have a hard time feeling her presence or do you feel like you felt her a lot, right? Like right afterwards, how did that go for you?
There would be little things that would happen. I would say probably nothing big, mm-hmm. you know, just like little things. And this might sound weird, but I went into my family room one morning and went to sit down on the couch, and there was a little teeny, like this big white feather on the couch. I have no idea like where that came from. We don't have birds in the house or right. chickens or anything else. So, you know, and whether those things, I feel like that the Savior knows that because we are human, because we are mortal, that sometimes we need something tangible. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we're told to have faith and have trust but I think He understands our weaknesses as human beings and has this understanding that, you know, I think she needs a little something maybe that's tangible. And, you know, whether that's where that feather came from, you know, I don't know. but it comforted me. And so there's been like little things like that. And there's just been things like, as I'm walking through the house, like you can just feel, you can feel it. You can feel the energy,
yeah.
You know, in certain places. And I'm sure that is either Whitney or my other angels or, you know, mm-hmm. But I know she's close. I know she's close. I lost my oldest brother, Doug, the one that lost the baby. I lost him, about 2 months before my son, Jeremy, was born, lost him to cancer. Mm-hmm. And, so my ear pods are going out, but, yeah, I just lost my train of thought.
You're okay.
But anyway, yeah, I do feel her. There's times I wish I felt her more,
mm-hmm.
you know, but
yeah. And so you said this was 2020. So this was a few years ago, right? Was it 2020 yeah. or 2020? Okay.
Yep. 2020.
Wow. Yeah. So yeah. I mean, I'm right there with you. People think sometimes like, oh, it's been a year or two, like you should be a lot better. And usually we are to a certain extent, but sometimes it just still feels so new, you know, it feels so recent. And, you know, one of the reasons why I had asked you, I don't know if maybe someone needs to hear this. But, after my brother passed away, that's all I wanted to do was I wanted to feel him. I wanted to know that he was still there. And I felt like I couldn't the way that I wanted to, you know what I mean? I was grasping at anything that I could to try to feel his presence. And I remember being so frustrated. And I had, I don't even know if I reached out to a friend or if he just randomly texted me. I think he randomly texted me. But my friend Troy Dunn, he messaged me and he had told me, you know, that he had heard about my brother. And then he said, don't be so upset if you can't feel him right now. And he said, I think that often we think that we're the only ones on this side of the veil that's grieving. We like to imagine our loved ones going over to the other side and it's just this glorious reunion and they're so happy and you know, they're not in pain and they don't have to worry and they have this bigger perspective because now all of a sudden they are in their true form of being, you know, spirit again. So they have a better understanding and knowledge and everything. And he's like, but I think he's like, sometimes maybe those who weren't quite prepared to leave, or maybe even the ones who were more prepared than others, he said that, I think they have to have their time to grieve too. Mm-hmm. And when we're in that process of grieving, it's really, really hard to feel the spirit because the emptiness that we feel and that separation, like we're not meant to be separated. And right. That's why it's so important to remember that families are eternal. And that's why grief is so hard is because we're really not meant to be separate from each other. We're meant to be together forever. And right. So when we have that break, we have that separation, it makes us, it just makes us feel less spiritual because yeah. It's not right. It's not what's eternal. And I loved when he told me that maybe my brother just needed time to grieve too. And until we could both get through our grief and heal a little bit from that, you know, we may not have that feeling of connection. And it's funny that you brought up the feathers because I didn't even know, and maybe some of the listeners on here don't know this, but there's this, I don't know, myth or legend or belief or whatever you want to call it, that if you see a feather, that it's someone on the other side that's letting you know they're around. I hadn't heard of this. I had never heard of this until about a year after my brother passed away. But as soon as I heard it, all of a sudden, I see feathers everywhere. I literally saw one in the party store the other day. You know what I mean? Like I'm standing at the register and I look down and there's like this white feather on the ground. I'm like, oh, that's okay. And I see it and I acknowledge it. And I'm just like, hey, Zach, you know, like I'll just kind of give him a little nod. But it's kind of nice. Like you said, like sometimes Heavenly Father knows that we're human and we just need a little something tangible to let us know that there is something else around there. Not that we need to look for signs, but but I also think that it's okay for us to keep our eyes and ears open to those tiny little miracles.
I think it's important. I really do. I think he wants us to open our hearts and our minds and, you know, and listen and, you know, and understand. He knows us better than anyone else. You know, he knows our needs and our wants and our hearts. And he knows what we need, you know, so, you know,
Well, let me ask if you could give one piece of advice to someone who is grieving right now, something that could help them to continue on their process and to do so in a healthy way and in a way where they can draw closer to the Savior. What kind of advice would you give them?
I'd probably say don't be hard on yourself. Allow yourself to have time and allow yourself to grieve, and whatever that looks like and whatever that timeline is, you know, it's okay. You know, there's not a set time. And it's like I said, it's so individual for everyone. But I do think it is important that if you are in, and we all, you know, get into those dark places, but to recognize that you're there and that you don't want to be there for very long, because that's dangerous.
Yeah.
And for me, it was reaching out, to my Savior, you know, to praying like I said, I've never prayed before. I felt such comfort in the scriptures, or whatever kind of, you know, spiritual book you can find comfort in, or talks, or we have so much available to us now to help us, you know. And then, like I said, working on forgiveness, and boy, sometimes that doesn't come for a while. And sometimes I remember saying to my bishop, I said, I don't know if I can ever forgive. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, don't worry about it. He said, if you can't forgive in this life, you'll learn how to forgive in the next. He's like, don't stress. And I think him just giving me that permission kind of open that up to, like, okay, you know, I don't have to right this minute. I always kind of felt like, you know, we have these steps, like this rungs of this ladder to get to, you know, wherever we're going to get in heaven. And that if we don't do all these steps, we're not going to get there. And I think it helped me to have this understanding of, it's okay. Just work on what you can, when you can. And if you don't get it now, you'll have an opportunity in the next life. And maybe that's why I even shared that story with my dad, because my dad to me was one of the most perfect men on the planet, and had extremely close, loving relationship with his Savior. And yet he was still learning as he was passing, and was still asking, you know, to be taught more.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Wow. This has been an awesome podcast.
Yeah,
you have just got so many good stories and insights, and thank you so much for being here and sharing them all with us.
Well, thank you.
For real, we really appreciate it.
Truly, my pleasure. It's tough, you know. It's hard, but my daughter's got her pom poms out.
Well, speaking of, are you taking new clients on? Yes. If someone was interested, how would they get in touch with you?
They could email, or I do have a website.
Okay.
It's Marianne M. Gudak, and my name is Marianne M. Gudak, Gudac, at .com. So it's just Marianne M. Gudak.com. Through there, or my email, or Facebook.
Okay.
Message me on Facebook.
Okay. We'll be sure to put all of those links in the description. So if anybody is interested, you guys just open up the description from wherever you're listening or watching this podcast, and you guys can reach out to Marianne. So awesome.
Yeah. And I do love it. I do love the life coaching.
It shows. You just have such a beautiful peace and light about you, you know, that even though you can tell that the heart is still hard sometimes, I guess I just look at you and I just see hope, and I love that so much. So
thank you.
Yeah. That's awesome. Thanks.
Well, thank you for this privilege.
Yeah, of course.
You bet. Thank you back. Thanks for being willing to share. And, you know, I know other people's lives will be touched because of it.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to end the show so that I don't cry any more of my face off. gosh, Marianne. Yes. Thank you so much. And to all of our listeners, guys, thank you for tuning in. We really, really appreciate it. We would love to hear some feedback from you guys. If you would like to leave us a comment, just kind of letting us know what you thought about Marianne's story and the advice that she's given, how it's touched your life, and how you have been able to feel Christ through your own trials. We would absolutely love to hear those stories and those thoughts that you guys have. So be sure to leave us a comment and let us know, and definitely do your 5-second missionary work for the day. Click that share button and let's get Marianne's story out there. There are so many people who are going through hardships, whether it's the loss of a loved one or some other form of grief or trial or tribulation. These messages can definitely help out a plethora of people. So don't be shy.
Let me just add in right there too. I want people to understand that grief is grief. Mm-hmm. It's not just the death of someone, you know, it's divorce, it's losing a job, it's finances. I mean, you know, grief is grief, and it's okay to feel that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again, Marianne. And
thank you
for all the listeners for tuning in to Marianne's story. And we will see you next week, where we will have another one. So until then, take care. Talk to you soon.
Bye.